What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Global markets turn in a mixed performance Tuesday. The global stock markets recovered some of Monday's sharp losses on Tuesday, but U.S. stocks faltered at the end with the benchmark Dow Jones off more than 1%. Financial writer Rhonda Scheifler says the market's recent volatility is a surprise to some.
The market over the last couple of days is behaving as the market typically does. The issue is we just haven't seen this kind of volatility for some time. So really what's been happening in the market is dramatic. It feels scary to some. The headlines look nasty. But markets go up and down, and we've been in a period that has been absent of volatility for so long that many investors have forgotten that this is what it's like.
China's faltering economy has weighed heavily on some investors. Tuesday, the central bank cut interest rates 0.25% and told banks they could hold less money in reserve. That makes it easier for consumers to buy products and companies to build factories and hire. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir is to sign a peace agreement with rebels Wednesday in Juba. The UN Security Council Tuesday threatened immediate action if he fails to do so. That could involve an arms embargo, travel ban, and asset freeze. Speaking to the council by video link Tuesday, the head of the UN mission, UNMISS, Ellen Margrethe Loy, said heavy fighting continues despite an agreed-to cessation of hostilities.
Despite this hopefully positive development, the security situation on the ground has been volatile and tense. Fighting in the greater Upper Nile region has remained intense, and further escalation of hostilities in southern Unity State has had increasingly severe consequences for the civilian population.
She warned the peace deal is only a first step, saying peace, stability, and prosperity will not come overnight. This is VOA News. U.S. defense spokesman Peter Cook Tuesday said Turkey has agreed to fly in coalition air missions against the Islamic State.
This includes full integration into the coalition's air tasking order, which tracks, coordinates, and deconflicts all coalition air operations. It could take a few days to put these technical arrangements into place at the operational level. We believe that Turkey is committed to fully participating as soon as possible.
Defense Secretary Ashton Carter said last week the Pentagon wanted Ankara to do more to fight against Islamic State. Last month, Ankara agreed to allow U.S. aircraft to use Turkish air bases. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad Tuesday said he's open to the idea of a coalition against IS, but indicated there's little chance of that happening with his enemies. Speaking on Hezbollah's al-Manar television Tuesday, Mr. Assad said any alliance that leads to stop the bloodshed must be a priority, but he said it's not possible the states which stood with terrorism would be states that fight terrorism. An apparent reference to Turkey and Saudi Arabia, who backed insurgent groups operating inside Syria. Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe presented his first State of the Nation address in 8 years Tuesday to Parliament amid heckling from the opposition, insisting his government is pressing to create jobs and revive the stagnant economy by boosting agriculture, encouraging private investment, and fighting corruption. Elias Mudzuri of the Movement for Democratic Change is unimpressed.
Roaming to hear what jobs have been created time today. What we are doing about the vendors, what are we doing about the jobs which have been lost. I wanted an answer from the president's view on how we are going to sort those things.
Zimbabwe's economy has been on a downward spiral for more than a decade with slow growth, low liquidity, and high unemployment. And the World Food Program has warned that 16% of the population could face food insecurity this year. The head of the UN nuclear watchdog agency, the International Atomic Energy Agency, said on Tuesday that he is confident about his agency's ability to determine if Iran has sought to develop a nuclear weapon more than a decade ago. The IAEA chief, Yukiya Amano, said Tuesday that Tehran has handed his investigators a substantive volume of information about its nuclear activities. But Mr. Amano said it is premature to know whether any of it divulged new details related to possible nuclear weapons development. Once again, the hour's top story. Global markets on Tuesday recovered some of the Monday's sharp losses sustained, but U.S. stocks faltered at the end on Tuesday with the benchmark Dow Jones Industrial Average off more than 1% at the close. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Wednesday, August 26th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Hopes are high that South Sudan's president could finally sign a peace deal today, Wednesday.
We are having a summit of heads of state, the IGAD countries, chaired by President Salva. And of course, they have got to do with the issue of the peace process. You can only say that there could be high probability of signing.
Bonabamera Benjamin is South Sudan's foreign minister. The United Nations says signing a peace deal is the first step towards ending South Sudan's 20-month civil war. President Mugabe was heckled yesterday as he delivered his State of the Nation speech. And Liberia's national oil company, Nocal, sacks its entire staff of 200.
Nocal has become the dumping ground for political appointees. And the perception is that there are too many people in it. But anyway, now the president has suggested a more realistic number for Nocal.
Rodney Sear is the publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper and online magazine. The World Health Organization says work is underway to better respond to global epidemics, and an appeal is made to combat measles in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Stories Plus, Mark Oldman, Sports, and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's foreign minister says there is a high probability that President Salva Kiir will sign a power-sharing peace agreement today, Wednesday, to end 20 months of civil war with rebels loyal to his former vice president, Riek Machar. But Bonabamera Benjamin says his government still has major reservations, including the demand to demilitarize the capital, Juba. He said if President Kiir is going to sign an agreement, it would be after a summit of East African leaders, which gets underway today, Wednesday, in Juba. The leaders of Ethiopia, Kenya, Sudan, and Uganda are members of IGA, the regional bloc that has been mediating an end to the war. Benjamin admits the international community, particularly the United States, has been pressuring President Kiir to sign the agreement.
We are having a summit of heads of state, the IGAD countries, and of course they have got to do with the issue of the peace process. You can only say that there could be high probability of signing. So I would advise that if you interview me tomorrow after the summit, you will really get a good story.
There's a quote by presidential spokesman Wek Ateni saying that at the end of the summit, the president of the Republic of South Sudan will sign the peace agreement.
Well, I cannot comment on that, but, you know, I'm the foreign minister, and if the spokesman said that, I cannot really come out at this time. I come out finally when the summit is over.
Coming out of Addis Ababa, your government was not happy with some aspects of the agreement. Have those been ironed out?
Yes, they had those reservations in the agreement, and they asked. And what we did in Addis, the chief negotiator initialed the areas of reservation, and the president and his delegation asked, all right, if this is the document which you consider to be peace process that you want us to sign, then we will go back to our constituency to do consultation. So we have been doing consultation, although we have not finished because we are given 15 days. And that's why the meeting of tomorrow, I think, is important.
Is the issue of demilitarizing Juba still a point of contention for your government?
Yes, it's a big concern. There is no country in the whole world that can remove its national army from its national capital, which is the seat of the sovereignty of that country. Because the national army has got the constitutional responsibility to protect the citizens of that country and even others who are not. And they're supposed to be a disciplined army. And that's why we thought it was a proposal which was really over the top. Right? How do you move a national army that fought liberation war for many years? And now they have settled in their national capital. They are in the barracks. They have now, for the first time, living with their families. Their children are going to school. Even if that was to be done, we will need time. First, we need money to build the new barracks where they should be moved. And it will take time to build those barracks for a huge army.
Minister, is your government being pressured to sign this agreement?
There's a lot of pressure, including from Secretary of State Kerry and everybody else. Of course, there's a lot of pressure, but they are telling them, yes, we will be able to sign, but give us time to consult with our constituency so everybody is on board. That's why 15 days were given.
Which presidents are coming to Juba?
The chairperson of ICA, that is Prime Minister Desalegn of Ethiopia, the and then President Museveni of Uganda, President Uhuru of Kenya, and the first vice president of the Republic of Sudan, because President Bashir is sending his first vice president to come, and then the foreign minister of Angola as the envoy of President Dos Santos, because they have had the chair of the ICGLR.
Mr. Minister, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and thank you very much.
Okay, Bakri, nice to hear you.
Barnaba Mara Benjamin, South Sudan's foreign minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. The head of the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan has welcomed news that President Salva Kiir will sign a peace deal with the opposition to end the country's 20-month-long civil war. However, Ellen Mangurate Loy told the UN Security Council that signing the agreement is only a first step to putting the country back on the path to peace, stability, and prosperity. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
Speaking via a video link from South Sudan's capital, Juba, UN envoy Loy urged the country's feuding leaders to put their people first.
I would like to reiterate my call to the leaders of South Sudan to place the interests of their people above their personal ambitions and to implement the peace agreement in good faith.
President Kiir is expected to sign the deal Wednesday in Juba at a mini-summit with regional heads of state. Loy said despite this positive development, the security situation on the ground has been volatile and tense, especially in Greater Upper Nile and Unity State. She said the number of civilians seeking safety at six UN bases has surged in the past 4 months to 200,000 people from 120,000 in April. UN Humanitarian Chief Stephen O'Brien, who visited South Sudan in late July, told the council that the humanitarian situation continues to sharply deteriorate. He said more than 2.2 million people are displaced, up by 200,000 since January, and that 4.6 million people face severe food insecurity. In half the country, he said a third of the children suffer acute malnutrition. In a statement read by the UN Security Council President, Nigerian Ambassador Joy Agwu, the council expressed its readiness to act immediately if President Kiir does not sign the agreement or if he signs with reservations. Ambassador Agwu did not say explicitly if that meant the council would move to vote on a draft resolution circulated last week by the U.S. delegation seeking to impose a year-long arms embargo and designate new individuals for asset freezes and travel bans if the government failed to sign the deal. The U.S. proposal was met with resistance from several council members, and negotiations have not yet yielded a compromise agreement. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe Tuesday delivered his State of the Nation address, revealing his government has adopted a 10-point plan aimed at making Zimbabwe an attractive destination for foreign investment, including boosting the economy and creating jobs. But the main opposition Movement for Democratic Change formation of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai was quick to dismiss the speech, saying it did not address the real challenges facing the nation.
Anti-corruption trust, firm.
Amid jeers from opposition MDC lawmakers, Mr. Mugabe said the plan will focus on revitalizing the agricultural sector, fighting corruption, and modernizing the country's archaic labor laws.
Advancing beneficiation and or value addition to our agricultural and mining resource endowment. 3, focusing on infrastructural development, particularly in the key energy, water, transport, and ICT subsectors.
He said, following the closure of large corporations and massive job losses, the government will support the small and medium-scale enterprises sector, as it is now the source of livelihood for many people in the country.
Government will need to address SMEs operating infrastructure such as construction of vendor marts and factory shells and the provision of human power training.
He admitted the economic situation in the country was bad, adding his government will soon overhaul its policies blamed for blocking foreign direct investment. Foreign investors and business have long told the government to repeal or amend laws such as the indigenization laws they said made Zimbabwe an unattractive foreign investment destination. Zimbabwe is one of the worst foreign investment destinations in the world owing to indigenization laws, the high cost of setting up a business, and an unpredictable political environment. Mr. Mugabe said his government is working on that.
We should see before the 31st of December this year an urgent overhaul of the Companies Act and all pieces of allied legislation which have hitherto hindered the ease of doing business.
Political analyst Takura Jangaja told Studio 7 that Mr. Mugabe's address was hollow and did not provide any solutions to the country's problems.
No, I think it was more about political correctness and routine than it was a presentation of a new plan or a new idea. Even though the president talked about a 10-point plan concerning the national economy, it does not reflect in total the sensitivity a leader should have towards the current economic crisis in the country.
The Tsvangirai MDC said in a statement Mr. Mugabe's address, given in the middle of a debilitating crisis that has brought the country to its knees, failed dismally and did not address what it said were monumental challenges facing the nation. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Today's Wednesday, August 26th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Let's give a shout out to our listeners on Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The National Oil Company of Liberia, NOCAL, on Tuesday sacked its entire staff of 200, saying it did so to save itself from collapsing due to declining oil prices. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf endorsed the retrenchments, saying the dismissals will bring costs under control and put NOCAL on a more viable financial footing. A statement issued Tuesday said the president instructed NOCAL's board of directors to restructure for organizational efficiency and effectiveness. Rodney Sear is publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper and online magazine. He says the mass retrenchments are not surprising because NOCAL, as a dumping ground for political appointees, has been known for bloated staffing and mismanagement.
This action by the president endorsing a decision by the board of directors of the National Oil Company of Liberia has been long in the making. As you may recall, some time ago, we reported that there were some problems within the oil sector, that there were concerns that the managers were paying extravagant travels outside the country, that they were misspending the money intended for the oil sector, and that things were not going according to plan. So what happened yesterday, actually, was the president endorsed the decision by the board of directors of NOCAL to dissolve the entire company, with the exception of the chief operating officer.
The company said it took the action to save the company from collapse because of falling oil prices.
Well, that's the contradiction, James. A lot of contradictions going on here. Because although there are oil prices going on, mind you, Liberia has not discovered a commercial quantity of oil. So the issue of oil prices dropping is a non-issue on this matter. The main problem is that the management was not running the company properly. And I think the decision or the announcement that it's because the oil prices was kind of an easy way out for them to get out of this crisis. There's a lot of issues that have been going on behind the scenes that were not addressed. As a result, we are where we are now.
President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has expressed regret, but is it possible that she did not know the problems that you're telling us that were happening in this company?
I think she has some knowledge because we interviewed her about a month ago, and she acknowledged that there were problems. Mind you now, there have been efforts by the oil company to sell 3 oil blocks to raise money for the economy, and that hasn't gone well. The president acknowledged to us that there were problems with the companies that had won the bids to win these contracts for the oil bids. Her acknowledgement showed that there were problems within the sector.
Rodney, it's estimated that about 200 employees will be affected by this retrenchment. Liberia is experiencing high unemployment right now. What do you think will be the likely impact of this?
Well, James, NOCAL has become the dumping ground for political appointees. Liberia hasn't discovered oil yet, so it's a very small company. And the perception is that there are too many people in employ anyway. Now, the president has suggested a more realistic number for NOPAL. She says there shouldn't be more than 50 people employed in that company. So it tells you that they acknowledge there's a problem.
Rodney Sears, publisher of Liberia's Front Page African newspaper and online magazine. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The World Health Organization has begun the process of producing new guidelines for responding more quickly and effectively to Ebola and other global epidemics and emerging diseases. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
A special review committee is meeting for 2 days this week at WHO headquarters to produce recommendations to address outbreaks like Ebola. The panel is looking at how international health regulations, known as IHR, were implemented during the crisis in West Africa and how to strengthen them. The IHR is an important legal instrument aimed at protecting populations by preventing and controlling the international spread of disease. The panel has set up 3 working groups to identify weaknesses with the Ebola response and seek solutions, according to Didier Hussein, who chairs the committee. He says the first group will focus on the flow of information and communication among member states and the WHO. He says the other groups will cover resources and compliance with policies.
We have a second group within this committee, which is going to address the question of capacities. Core capacities in terms of epidemiology, surveillance, laboratories, points of entry, etc. And we have a third group, which will be addressing the question of compliance to rules and the question of the governance of international health regulation.
Hussein says one of the biggest problems is getting countries to comply with the IHR. He says there are many reasons, including the inability of poor states that have poor health systems and lack the financial means to follow through on the epidemiological or surveillance requirements. He says the committee will look into this problem and consider how to help these states perform better. The panel says it aims to produce its recommendations in time for a meeting of the WHO's decision-making body next May. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The current measles epidemic in the Katanga province of the Democratic Republic of Congo could affect up to 100,000 people or more if resources are not mobilized to tamper the outbreak, according to a medical professional working in the area. Johan Anna, program manager in the DRC for the Alliance for International Medical Action, tells Ricky Shryak that the epidemic has killed more than 1,000 out of 100,000 cases.
It was about 20,000 people, 20 new cases, and about 300 deceased. So it's quite a big number of people. Regarding lethality, it's even higher than the outbreak in 2010 to 2011.
And this is since January that there's been 20,000 cases, correct?
This is since January, exactly. It looks like it's worse in terms of mortality. It's not easy to say whether it's going to be worse than in terms of caseload. That's because currently this new outbreak is mainly having an impact in the rural areas and not in the urban areas who are much more dense populated, as it happened in 2010 and 11.
Does it appear to be spreading more and more? Does it appear to be getting worse as it goes on?
The spread is still getting worse. At the beginning of the year, we were about 9 zones de santé impacted, and now we are already talking about 21, 22 health zones who are touched by the epidemic.
Are you concerned that it's going to continue to spread to other health zones?
It's very likely it's going to spread to other health zones and even further. It's not going to stop in Katanga, but it's very likely that it's going to spread to other provinces as well.
Why is it hard to stop measles? Is it extremely contagious, or is it about access to health facilities, access to sanitation?
It's a very extreme contagious pathology, disease. Children are the most affected ones. The main problem is that it's not difficult to be treated and it's not even difficult to prevent. But due to the health system in the DRC, which is not very solid, I would say it's quite fragile. It's not easy to implement the prevention measures that are necessary to stop an epidemic like this one.
What are some of those prevention measures?
There are two main measures that you can do in an epidemic like this one. One is prevention by vaccinating all the kids who are the most affected. And the second one is treatment. Once you treat the kids, they are less contagious, actually. If you treat the people and you vaccinate the kids, the epidemic should be over quite soon.
Why weren't these children vaccinated?
Some of these health areas are quite isolated. They are not easy to be, they are quite out of reach. At the same point, what I would say is the most important factor is that the health system is not well equipped to vaccinate the kids following the vaccination calendar. So that's the main problem.
That was Yoann Annan, Program Manager in the Democratic Republic of Congo for the Alliance for International Medical Action. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from N'Djamena, Chad. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. Little-known Kenyan policeman Nicholas Bett clocked a lifetime best of 47.79 seconds to triumph in 400-meter hurdles on Tuesday. This is the world's quickest time in the event this year. What's more, he shattered the old Kenyan record of 48.23 seconds by Eric Keter at the 1993 World Championships in Stuttgart, Germany. Meanwhile, Genzebe Dibaba clocked 4 minutes and 8.09 seconds to win women's 1500 meters. She hands Ethiopia their first gold medal of this championship. Kenyan Faith Chepngetich Kipyegon claimed the silver medal. Later on, Kenyan David Lekuta Rudisha won the 800 meters in 1 minute and 45.84 seconds. Rudisha, who first won the two-lap event at the 2011 World Championships in Daegu, South Korea, did not defend his title 2 years later due to a leg injury. Staying in Beijing, Kenya consolidated their lead at the top of the World Championship medal table on Tuesday with 4 gold, 3 silver and 2 bronze medals. Ethiopia is 5th with 1 gold and 2 silver medals. Eritrea is 9th with 1 gold medal and Uganda is 20th with 1 bronze medal. Still in Beijing, today Wednesday, more Africans are out in force vying for more medals at the World Championship. Botswana's Isaac Makwala and South Africa's Wade van Niekerk contest the 400-meter finals. South African Wenda Nel competes in women's 400-meter hurdles. Tunisian Habiba Gribi, Ethiopian's Hiwot Ayele and Sofia Sefa, Moroccans Salima Elwali Alami and Fadwa Sidi Madani, along with Kenyans Virginia Nyambura, Hyvin Kieng and Roseflin Chepngetich, will be in action in women's 3,000 meters steeplechase. On the infield, Kenyan Julius Yego and Egypt's Ihab Abdelrahman El Sayed contest the javelin. Turning to basketball, defending champions Angola squeezed past the Central African Republic 62-61 to qualify for the quarterfinals at the Africa Men's Basketball Championships in the Tunisian capital Tunis on Tuesday. Egypt dismissed Zimbabwe 102-62. Tunisia pipped Morocco 69-68 and Mali outplayed Ivory Coast 76-57. Today, Wednesday, Cameroon face Algeria, Cape Verde Islands tackle Gabon, Senegal encounter Uganda, and Nigeria engage Mozambique. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The UN Security Council is threatening to act immediately if South Sudan's President Salva Kiir does not sign a peace deal with rebels on Wednesday, as promised. Council President Joy Ogwo of Nigeria did not say exactly what the council would do. She said Mr. Kiir must sign the deal. That's it for this Wednesday, August 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We ask you to join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
African music hits.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special. Her lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time
with David Bandy.